welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. Then we stream live at richarddugan.com. We also archive these programs, podcast them, if you will, at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. Go there and take a listen to, I think the total would be somewhere in the neighborhood of over 600-plus interviews on the website over 10-plus years, not to mention additional interviews that are available on some of the other pages. Check it out. Check out not only the interviews, but also we have links to our guests. Go to their website and find out what they are all about, what they are having to share with you. We place this smorgasbord, if you will, out in front of you, and you take what it is that will work for you, what resonates with you, and run with it, if you will. And we encourage you to do that because this information is just too important to leave to chance. And I guarantee you, you only have a changed life to basically have happen in yours. You have nothing to lose and everything to gain. A changed life, a changed world, maybe. Who knows? Interesting program today because we're going to be delving into. And I was thinking about this as I was heading for this interview, how I was going to open this particular program, thinking about my upbringing as a Roman Catholic child, kid growing up and learning, going through catechism and learning all of the things that one is supposed to know, especially about the Trinity. And we're going to be talking about, if you will, a new church and a new Trinity. Yes, a new Trinity. Happy, healthy, and wealthy. The Church of Prophet C. That's Prophet Sea. And my guest is going to be joining us. She has actually put this particular work together. Karen Steele is my guest, and I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Hello, Richard. It's wonderful to be here.
You know, it's interesting how as I have lived this short little 57 plus years on the planet, and I've come across myriad different people and different philosophies. Some are, you know, they're okay. You know, some of them are a little out there, but that's okay. Everybody's got their own perspective, and it may not resonate with me, but it may with someone else. And my perspective is, you know, we're here sort of to serve and help one another up that proverbial ladder. You know, we put a hand down to help someone up, and someone's putting a hand down to help us up. And we all are sort of heading in the same direction. And you're kind of doing the same thing for all of us here through this process. And I know that when I mentioned this new Trinity of happy, healthy, and wealthy, I know that I joke about this from time to time on the program, how the United States Declaration of Independence says that we can pursue happiness and that without your health, you have nothing. And that people, especially in the developed worlds, in the, I guess you'd call them first world or industrial or post-industrial, what have you, there many people are trying to accumulate that wealth. So what we want to do first, of course, is talk about this concept of the Church of Prophet C and how you came up with this. First of all, what does Prophet C mean? Because it's not S-E-E as if being able to see it. It seems as though it's S-E-A is how it's spelled. And maybe that concept of abundance, not just cash in the checking account.
That's correct. The Church of Prophecy was a vision of mine when I was on my way to become a Unity minister. That was my goal at the time. That was 20 years ago. And the Church of Prophecy was a vision that came to me after I saw my first and last MLM company pay plan. And I thought, oh my God, we could actually get rich by loving our neighbor.
mm-hmm.
It was a total, my teeth vibrated for a week. This idea was so powerful to me. How, what if instead of a product like juice or vitamins or some cream that keeps you young forever, what if the product was self-actualization? And what if instead of membership, there was mentorship where you actually teach people by example, right? It's a way of not giving a fish, but teaching them how to fish.
Mm-hmm.
But this works both ways. You do both.
Okay.
You teach them by example, and then you give them a tool to do it with.
Yeah, exactly. And I know, too, for some reason, this came to mind just now, that when we've had certain natural disasters, for example, the most recent in Texas and Florida, and, of course, the islands to the east, where we had two, three, four, one right after another. I jokingly say we had a fifth that started Election Day 2016, has no center, and hasn't ended yet. But we'll deal with that on another time. But what I noticed at some on these particular ones, and then comparing it to nearly 10 years earlier, 11 years earlier, with Hurricane Katrina, I noticed very few people in 2017 who were crying for help, but just sitting there doing nothing. Whereas in 2005, that's all I saw were people on rooftops saying, "Hey, what about me? Help me, help me, help me." And it reminded me of that old story of the floods came and God sent a myriad of different things, and eventually the guy dies and he's meeting with God and he's upset with God. He says, "God, I was down there and I was drowning and then I ended up dying. Why didn't you help me?" He says, "Well, I sent you all those things to help you, you know, and yet, you know, and I, my heart went out to those people in 2005. I'm, it's a shame the number of lives that were lost, as well as here in 2017. But it seems as though, I don't know, maybe we have made some strides in the last 11 years to becoming a little more self-reliant and responsible. Because I saw hundreds of people who were willing to literally risk their lives to save the lives of others. I mean, and you can even take that to man-made disasters of the horrific kind that we've experienced in this country alone. I saw a report that there had been, I think it was over 300 shootings, mass shootings of three or more people in this country in the year 2017 as of this conversation we're having in November. And there were mothers who jumped in front of their children to save their lives. There were people, strangers, who did the same thing with strangers, on and on and on. So it seems to me like, I don't know, maybe we're at a place now where what you're saying is starting to maybe take root.
I certainly hope so. Do you know that the great, great quote from Karl Marx back in the 40s or 30s. He said, "Religion is the opiate of the masses."
Mm-hmm.
I truly believe today the media is the opiate of the masses.
It's a religion of a sort, because there are people who follow it and watch it constantly.
And the spiritual and scientific truths that the Church of Prophecy stands on is the truth that we create our own reality. And I mean, this is an Einstein quote, and Einstein happens to be my superhero. I feel his energy with me every day. I was born on his birthday. But Einstein said, "Everything is energy, and that's all there is to it. Match the frequency of the reality you want, and you cannot help but get that reality. It can be no other way."
Yeah.
He said, "This is not philosophy, it is science." Well, I say that Einstein said that science without religion is lame. And religion without science is blind. They go together. Hmm. But I'm not talking about a specific religion. I think every single person has inside of them the source energy, that pure, positive, non-physical, God force, source, love energy within them to be, do, and have everything they want. But when we mesmerize ourselves in front of that tube and watch all this horrible stuff going on around the world, in tiny little pockets of the world, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, 7.5 billion people, and oh my God, a few people were killed today. Let's call it quits.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, I've even lived through these phases where you've had these, I'm not even sure what to refer to them as, religious leaders, philosophical leaders, or deceivers, what have you. And actually, it goes back to the 70s, even to that point. It's been repeated over and over again a number of times for different reasons by different people. But the man who comes to mind in particular is a guy by the name of Jim Jones back in the early 70s, who convinced a bunch of people to, as the phrase has been coined, to drink the Kool-Aid. and hundreds and hundreds of men, women, and children died down in Guyana. But it was based upon his philosophy, whatever that was. I've never followed up on it. All I know is that the philosophy included basically saying, look, you know, things aren't going to change, so we're going to, it's like what you were saying before, a few people died, so call it quits. And that's what they did. They said nothing's going to change. And
I have a whole chapter in my book on death is the boogeyman.
Yes.
And this is a scientific fact, too. We are not physical beings. Mm-hmm. We are not physical beings. We're 99.99% pure energy. That's what we are. And I personally believe I am an eternal vibrational being.
So when you talk, you quoted Einstein, who, by the way, there are very few pictures, but there are a few that he is wearing a cape. I want you to know that. So he was definitely a superhero. I've sort of put this to, especially when I'm talking health and wealth, body health in particular with individuals, and we start getting off on, okay, you should eat this and you should eat that, you should take this, take that, these supplements, these herbs, these vitamins, et cetera, et cetera. And what Einstein said, as you quoted, that it's all, everything is energy. It's all just energy. And so in those conversations, I say, okay, I don't want to minimize your point, but if it's all energy, what difference does it make what we consume? Because it's all energy. And
Jesus said it.
Yeah.
Richard, Jesus said, it's not what goes in the mouth that defiles the man.
It's what comes out. Yes. Now, to that end, there is also a karmic law that basically says what comes around goes around. So what goes out, okay, is going to come back. And I think the best biblical passage, and I don't remember if Jesus said this or one of the apostles, basically referring to casting your bread upon the water, you know, and you just cast it out there 100, 1,000-fold, it'll come back to you. Well, that's true with everything that we do. And when I started to watch the unfolding of events in this country over the last two or three years, I said, this is unsustainable. This attitude, this particular perspective on the world and on our own people, all of our people in this country in particular, the negativity, in spite of the fact that it supposedly accomplished a short-term goal, it's unsustainable. It's going to come back to undo everything that supposedly the people that were basically putting this out, it's going to undo everything that they've supposedly wanted to accomplish, because you can't keep doing that. It's like my wife and I, we bought a Volkswagen Jetta, and it was a diesel, and we went into a car wash to get it washed and filled up with gas, with fuel, and we told them diesel, but they filled the tank up with gasoline. And we didn't drive more than a block, and we realized, no, wait, something's not right here. And we stopped the car. And, of course, the company had to pay for the repairs and so on and so forth. You can't put gasoline in a diesel engine tank and expect it to run. So you can't put out, you know, you talk about not what goes in but what comes out that defiles a man, or, for that matter, the converse as well. And I also think of an Old Testament passage, Karen, that not just as, let's see, how is it, how is the phrase go? Raise a child up in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Which is
love that verse.
It's a double-edged sword.
It's scary.
If you raise a child up and you have consciousness to do that in such a way that lifts them up, lifts up our society, our people, our you know, and so forth, and ourselves, then when they grow old, they will continue to be of service to self and others. But if you see an adult, okay, and there are examples everywhere of this fact, when you see an adult, whether it's a gunman who has shot hundreds of people or a politician who is just mean and nasty, that child, that adult, is only exhibiting those characteristics that they were raised with.
It's a product of their raising.
So yes, it's a double-edged sword.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about happiness. What is your definition under the new Trinity of happiness? Or happy, healthy, wealthy, what is happy?
All right. Happiness is always, and I mean always, happiness is always an inside job. Unconditional happiness is as rare as unconditional love. As long as humans look outside themselves for their happiness, it will constantly elude them. Conditions are temporary. Happiness that comes from source energy is eternal. And that is my definition of happiness. And I live by it on a day-to-day basis, knowing I am responsible. I am responsible for my happiness. I am responsible for my love of life. I've never been a collector of things. I am a collector of life experiences, and I have had so many, and I do not regret a single one.
As far as health, I think that's probably fairly self-explanatory, but by the same token, it isn't just physical health, is it?
Well, no, naturally, but that's the main thing is that your body is fed by the thoughts you think, it, just like everything else. If you are thinking happy, healthy, productive, loving thoughts, you're going to have a healthy body. This can go over a period of 10, 20, 30 years before negative thinking, fearful thinking, resentful thinking can add up, and then all of a sudden, oh my God, this just came out of the blue. I was just diagnosed with terminal whatever. This doesn't happen overnight. This is a process that we put our bodies through with the thoughts we think over a long period of time.
And the wealth?
That is when you are happy and you are healthy, you're going to be open to wealth-creating ideas. And what does that mean? It's different for everybody because everybody has an inside little counter in their head that says, this is how much I am worth. It's no matter what area of this great country we're in, and we now have minimum wage here everywhere, I think.
Yeah.
but some people really believe, okay, this is how much I'm worth. And they will never rise above that until they can raise their belief system. The Church of Prophecy, the rock that the Church of Prophecy was built on, is the belief system. And we are what we believe. And every great teacher, whether it be spiritual or business, every great teacher I've ever listened to or read knew that if you believe you can, you can. If you believe you can't, you can't. So how do we change our belief?
That's a question. How do we?
Practice. Practice, practice, practice. I've been doing it for 20 years. It took me from the time a Church of Prophecy was given to me, and I decided that this is my ministry. By the way, a ministry, a prosperity ministry, unlike anything else that has ever hit this planet. We are thinking thoughts that have never been thought before. It's taken me 20 years to be the example. Mm-hmm. And it was just only in the last 4 years, after beating my head against the wall, not understanding why people weren't getting this, mm-hmm. that I started doing exactly what I've been preaching. And I'm not only extremely happy with my life, I'm a realtor. I love my job. And I am healthy. I'm 71 years old, and I don't take one single medication. I am as healthy as any 25-year-old you're going to see out there. And I've quadrupled my income in the last 4 years by doing what I'm preaching.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because it brings to mind, I spent 15 years at one radio station, started at minimum wage. You brought that up earlier. Of course, minimum wage back in 1980 was $3.65 an hour. And when I left 15 years later, I had doubled my income to $7, $7.25 an hour after 15 years. Now, the difference between my attitude towards that and that of others who I actually hired over the course of that time as the operations manager was that when I would hire people and then they started working for me at the radio station, and I should say actually working with, because I never liked the concept of somebody working for me. Because we were all doing the same job. I just happened to be the guy they put in charge. A lot of people would, when I would say, hey, would you please go do thus and such, because it really is a mess in there, what have you. They would make the comment as they went off to do it, well, you guys don't pay me enough, to which I would usually respond, that was in the job description when you were hired. That's cleaning the toilet. That, I'm sorry, is part of the job because of where we worked. We worked at the transmitter site. All of us. We had 8-hour shifts, 24/7. We were on the air, and somebody always had to be there. So we all had to keep the place clean. If you cooked food in the microwave and it exploded, you got to clean the microwave, et cetera, et cetera. My perspective in terms of I could have gone down that road. I could have taken that attitude saying, yeah, you know. I remember a story in the mid-80s from that came out on I think it was CBS Radio at the time. And they said that Motorola was laying off some 100 people from a particular plant in a particular city here in the U.S. I can't remember exactly where. But the gist of the story was that the reason they were laying off 100 people was because they had found after an audit that over $1 million worth of materials had been pilfered. Now, whether it was pilfered by those specific 100 or not, the fact of the matter was the people that worked there didn't think that Motorola paid them enough, so they figured they were justified in stealing from the company. And what happened? Mm-hmm. Boom, they got tossed. Now, I, on the other hand, looked at it from the perspective that I was, not only did I have this job to do the stuff that I was doing, I was given a slot in the evening to air interviews that like what I do today. And I began to look at it from the standpoint that, okay, well, here's my hourly rate, all right, for a 5-day, 40-hour week. But that's not all I get paid. I get paid in the time slot that I don't have to pay for, and the interview with the conversation that I have with the guest. They'll usually send me a book, or if it's a musician or what have you, a CD. I also have the contact that I have made. I've had some of those folks on this program here from Santa Barbara from that time period that we've had great conversations. So I looked at it that I was getting that there was always an exchange, but it didn't necessarily come back to you the way you thought. Do you think people, because, you know, you mentioned minimum wage, and a lot of people are real happy about that. There are a lot of folks that aren't so happy because they think, oh, is this going to destroy the economy because prices are going to have to go up? It's like, well, this particular model isn't real sustainable the way it is, because when you work someplace, you kind of hope that over the course of the years, and I worked at a place for 15, I was hoping maybe I'd walk away with a little bit more than double what I started with. But be that as it may, you stay at a place, and it used to be that way, right? That you'd stay at a job for sometimes 20, 30 years or more until you retired. And over the course of that time, you'd get a little increase, right? Well, that increase
was a dream. That was the American dream.
Right.
And build your little house with your white picket fence and have 2.3 children and you work at the same job for 20, 30 years.
Right.
That was it.
And then, of course, as those salary increases came, what has to happen at the company? Company's got to raise prices to be able to pay that, right? So that means that the people who buy your product or service are going to have to pay a little bit more. So then they got to go to their employer and they got to say, I need a little bit more money because. And of course, now you have this cycle. But that hasn't happened in the sense that a lot of jobs haven't, so to speak, kept pace with that particular thing. But it's, again, it isn't a sustainable model. And it's, I think, primarily because we've gotten into that mindset when we think about wealth, we think about the American dream. I've got to have more, more, more. And it's all got to come in cash. It's got to come in the numbers that go in my bank account. Instead of, I look at prosperity, for example, and anytime I'm given a gift, to me, that's prosperity. And it may be something I really needed or wanted. Oh, I don't have to buy that now, because someone just gave that to me, and I'm very grateful for that. Do you think that, tell me about that aspect of the Church of Prophecy and how that works in regards to drawing to us. I know we talked before this interview about the law of attraction.
Law of attraction, and also, you know, when you talk about the economy in this country going back 20, 30 years, let's go back 200 years.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We used to trade for things.
Yes.
You know, beads and animal skins. God forbid they should do that today.
Doctor, here's my chicken.
But I mean, this is over 200 years. Our economy has gone from trading beads and animal skins to what it is today.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this economy did not get from there to here by trucking in resources from other planets. All right.
Mm-hmm.
This is all about vibrational frequency. It's about the frequency. The most powerful vibration we've got going for us is desire. And that's the Bible banner verse of the Church of Prophecy, mm-hmm. Psalms 145:16. You open your hand and satisfy the desire of every living thing. Desire is the fuel. We are born of desire, we are fueled by desire, and we are manifested by design. And the design that we are manifesting is our design, whatever we want. This is called evolution. There's always going to be more. There's always going to be improvements that we will want on what we currently have. That's what moves us forward. Now, I am of the vibrational nature that I live in an abundant universe, and this universe is abundant. We have people with a poverty consciousness and we have people with a prosperity consciousness. And the person with a poverty consciousness will always see lack and shortage. And the person with a prosperity consciousness is always open to the abundance that is around them all the time. The sea of prophets. That's around them all the time. And every person is a profit center. Every single person is a profit center, and they determine what they're worth. And if you don't see yourself as a profit center and taking in all the abundance the universe has to offer, then you are definitely in someone else's profit center, giving them what they want.
Mm. You know, it's interesting, too, that you say it that way, because I think about that in terms of where I live, for example, not only in Santa Barbara specifically, but in terms of the physical locale where I reside with my wife, our two dogs, our six cats, our five chickens. As a matter of fact, speaking of which, as I was leaving for work today, the chicken run and coop are right outside the front door, and we come down the steps and there they are, and they're all standing there at the end, at the front facing space to the run, as if they're waiting for us. Now, we go in there in the evening, or at least we did up until we switched to standard time, and we'd go in there and sit with them until they said, "Hey, you know, it's getting a little dark out here. We need to go inside now." And they go into the coop, and we'd sit there until they did that. And then we'd lock them up because we want to protect them from predators, even though the run itself is pretty well protected. It's quite a fortress. And we had just a bad experience several years ago with 20 or 30 hens, and we lost them all in one fell swoop. But they were right there. And it was as if they were waiting for us to come in, sit down on the bench, and for them to sort of commune with us. And I thought, that is so neat. That is not anything that you can buy. That is something that you can only experience. And it really is a very, they'll jump up on our knee. Matter of fact, my wife's even had a couple of them jump up on her shoulder. And if she doesn't have her hair up, they start, as she phrases it, grooming her. They'll peck at her hair and kind of pull down on it a little bit. And I mean, it's just the greatest experience. The same thing with our dogs, who are so loving, and our cats, the same thing. They just want to be around us. And that to me is priceless. You can't put a dollar amount on that, you know, and it's almost like you want to share that with everyone else.
I agree 100%. And I don't put a dollar amount on anything, but everything, even money, is energy.
Mm-hmm.
And to be a part of that free-flowing consciousness that is in everything. It's in the chickens. It's in the dogs. It's in the caterpillars. It's in the sea turtles that I was saving after Hurricane Irma went through here.
Mm.
It is so potent and powerful and palpable. It's everywhere. And just being in the flow of that will bring you the happiness, the health, and the prosperity. I guess people have a problem with calling it, they think of wealth as money.
Yeah, the dollar sign. You know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's not. The wealth of nations, that's what got this country started on its way.
Yeah.
And it's all about understanding that every individual has their own personal desires. Mm-hmm. And it's those personal desires held in mind and held strong that, as Wealth of Nations, Adam Smith said, it's like an invisible hand moving that's going to contribute to the greater good for all. It's magic.
Mm-hmm. It really is. I can attest to that fact. We've been through some interesting phases in our lives, both through my first wife and my present wife, on a personal level, when it dealing with finance. I've been through some unbelievably stressful periods in my life where I couldn't sleep at night because I was worried about our finances. And it's kind of ironic in a way, though we started the process back in Phoenix, it's only since we moved to Santa Barbara, one of the most opulent and prosperous and wealthy corners of the country, let alone the planet, where, I don't worry about it. I don't know exactly why, but I just don't worry about it. And maybe it's partly due to the fact something that you said, as well as the concept of everything is energy. You also made the comment in so many words, or not so many words, that in the grand scheme of things, none of this matters. In 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 years from now, A, who's going to be around to remember the stress that I was going through, you know, in the late 20th and early 21st centuries, dealing with finance? And who's going to care? It's less than a puff of smoke. And it's I mean, right at this moment, and you say it's relevant. Well, yeah, and that's relative, because isn't it all? Let me rephrase that. Is it all a matter of perspective?
Absolutely. I have three siblings that preceded me into the death experience. I call it croaking. And my mother says to me, Karen, why are you so healthy?
Wow.
And I looked at her, and I, right out of my mouth without even thinking, it's because I don't worry about a damn thing. I do not worry about anything, because I trust the power that is in me. Mm-hmm. And there's, I tell people, worry is a prayer for what you don't want. Believe me, worry is a prayer for what you don't want, and you're going to get it. You're going to get more things to worry about. The more you worry, the deeper in crap you get.
Yeah. What is it that when it's dealing with, for example, the law of attraction, or the secret, as has been popularized through the movie and the book, and they talk about things that you want to phrase it from the standpoint of what you want, not what you don't want, because the universe doesn't hear the don't. It hears that which you don't want. I don't want more debt. All it hears is more debt.
And it gives more debt.
And it gives it to you. And so, and I've often been criticized a little bit. And again, this is more on a personal level. When I would do little projects, especially when I was working back in Phoenix, the 15 years for this religious station, be criticized for not charging more. And again, going back to that philosophy that I developed during that period of time, I basically said, okay, well, I could charge more, knowing that they can't afford to pay more, and then I don't get to do the work. So I would rather charge the little that they can afford to do the work and be of service to them in the best possible way that I can. So at least I get to do the work. And then they get something in, and they get their project in return, or what have you. And because, you know, it's been a long time, but, you know, I finally have I remember the first time that I charged a flat rate, and I was really scared about telling the first client that I came to with that. And I said it sort of, okay, I charge $25 an hour. And I was waiting for can't afford that. They didn't cringe. And I'm going, oh, wow. Well, that's pretty cool. Okay. And not to like, well, actually it's 50. Now maybe it's 75, you know. No. And it was like, it's okay to ask. They might have said no. And that would have been okay too.
Yes, and one of my favorite poets, Khalil Gibran, he wrote the book The Prophet.
Ah, yes.
He said, those who do not work with love should go and sit at the temple gate and take alms from those who do. And that, to me, is the key to everything. I don't work for money. I work for the love of what I do. Mm-hmm. And when that clicks in and that starts moving through me and through everything I do and through everyone I meet, money is not even the object here. Mm-hmm. You know? It's do what you love. and everything else will follow.
Is it
whether it be in the form of money or friendships or new ideas, who knows?
Mm-hmm. Is it because you believe or that you know that from the New Testament where Jesus speaks of the fact that, you know, why are you worried about all these things? Why are you worrying about being taken care of? Because, hey, even the birds, you know, they don't toil. They don't do these mm-hmm. different things that you folks do. And yet your Father in heaven takes care of them.
Yeah. Well,
is it because
said,
you believe or know it?
The rock in the Church of Prophecy is belief, because people's belief is creating their reality. And unfortunately, most people are creating their reality by default because they really don't know that they are doing this by their beliefs. But yes, when a belief gets to a knowing, and that is from the outer to the inner, that is when the magic happens. That is when the heavens open up and you breathe freely without any fear, getting from belief to knowing. But thoughts are things. No matter what you're thinking, your thought thinks a thought. And if you aren't thinking on purpose and consciously, you're creating your own reality by default.
Mm. The Church of Prophecy. We're going to ask some more pointed questions in regards to this new church. Churchofprophecy.com is the website, so we encourage you to check it out. We will be linked to that website as well. I'm Richard Dugan, and we're talking with the founder thereof, Karen Steele, and we're going to be back with more here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, along with Karen Steele. We're talking about the Church of Prophecy. We are basically taking a look at, I think this is fascinating, this whole aspect of dealing with not membership, but mentorship. I want to talk a little bit about that, but first let me ask you some fundamental questions regarding the Church of Prophecy. Where is its headquarters?
Right here in Cape Canaveral, Florida, the Space Coast.
Oh, you are so lucky you got to watch those launches.
I love them.
How very cool. I have followed that program, since I was a little kid, watching them take off on TV and walking on the moon. Whether it really happened or not, I don't know. I don't care. The imagination
is
a wonderful thing.
Elon Musk is my favorite entrepreneur in the whole world today.
Amazing, amazing stuff. All right, so you are the founder of this church, if you will. Mm-hmm. Is there a physical building?
No. We are each our own. We are each the center of our own universe. That's what we are. I mean, there's over 7.5 billion points of light on this planet, and every one of them are God. And when you know that, when you understand that, when you practice that, belief, whether it be with walking down nature's trail and making a list of all the things you appreciate, or whether it's sitting in meditation in the morning and getting in touch with that incredible, powerful force that you are, that we are each the center of our own universe. And the law of attraction is bringing to us everything that we are putting out. We are creating our own reality.
Is there the equivalent of, shall we say, a catechism?
No.
Okay. And there's an interesting, because you actually have a whole chapter on this, and I know I've struggled with it. I know other folks have too. And then there are those people who, they don't have any problem with this at all. First of all, I don't have a problem rendering unto Caesar what is Caesar's. Matter of fact, I sit around and I grumble about certain things as far as government on all levels. Doesn't matter. The certain things come up and, I've got an opinion on that and I'll share my opinion with them. And they say, well, yeah, but, you know, you got to make sure you get out and vote and do this and that and the other thing. And I say, look, you want me to be quiet? As soon as they allow me to keep every dollar that I earn, then I will go over in the corner. You'll never hear from me again. But in the meantime, until I, because I'm still paying their salaries, whether I vote for them or not, I am still paying their salaries. So the moment they let me keep every 100% of what I earn. But then you've got the converse, and that is dealing with the concept of tithing or giving of, as the definition is, 10%. There are those who sit here, they'll sit there and they'll go, but I'm making less than minimum wage and I can't afford to give 10% of every $100. I can't, $10, that'd go a long way for this or that or the other essential stuff. How can I afford to do that? I know where that attitude's coming from, but I want you to elaborate on A, that attitude, but also the importance of both of those concepts that you do elucidate in the book.
Well, the concept of tithing is to free up our trust. It's to put our faith in the power that is the energy of money. I tithe because it's a giving back of what was given me. But also I tithe to Unity Church, and I happen to believe the principles are phenomenal. They're just phenomenal. And I came from a very strict fundamentalist background, and it was a huge leap for me to go from that into Unity. And they were there for me. And as far as I'm concerned, that, I mean, it was a miracle to me that I was able to make that leap. I want it to be there for everyone in the future. The Church of Prophecy, you don't tithe to.
Mm-hmm.
The Church of Prophecy is for people who know these principles, live these principles, love these principles, and want to teach by example and bring anyone along with them that wants to come, enjoy the ride. And I will say this right now. I know a lot of spiritual people that are too spiritual to be rich, but I don't know any rich people that are too rich to be spiritual. And the Church of Prophecy is for the latter. If you're too spiritual to be rich, then this is not for you.
Hmm. Okay. Interesting. And I guess that we mentioned this at the earlier in the program, having to do with the quote unquote American dream. And it's certainly there are some aspects of it, stereotypical aspects of it. I know that two cars in every garage and a chicken in every pot, picket fence and a house, 2.4 kids. I feel sad for the 1.4 kid.
Yeah.
one wife, one husband for until death do us part. And I know that in the 80s and early 90s, and again, working for the Christian radio station, there were people that wanted to go back. It was going back to that. And yet there was a lot of other baggage that comes along with having that, because they were thinking about the 50s. We need to go back in the 40s and 50s when life was good and there was a chicken in every pot and two cars in every garage and the wife stayed home and took care of the kids and the dad went off and he did his work and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is the 21st century.
Do you know, I would not go back to living in a teepee for all the money in the world.
Not even a three-bedroom, two-bath teepee?
No.
Oh, my. It's one of those things that is very elusive. Now, for myself, in where I am today, and probably for the last maybe 10 years or so, I've been quite content to live in a two-room cottage on the side of a hill out in the middle of ostensibly nowhere, up above the city of Santa Barbara and Goleta and Summerlin and so forth and so on. Where we have a fair amount of isolation and seclusion. We're not even that close to our neighbors who live on the property. And
sounds like heaven to me.
I would have a hard time moving into a neighborhood where we used to live in Phoenix, where your neighbors were literally 15, 20 feet away on either side and behind you, let alone the street that divided you from the people that lived across the street from you. which was nice back then. It was okay because you had that community, you know, and it's not that I don't want it. I certainly do want it, and I have it because it's community is it takes many different forms.
But, yes, it does.
But what about the aspect of collective consciousness? Yes, we, you, Karen, me, I, Richard, we have our individual desires, things that we want to have in our lives. Mm-hmm. How do we then translate that into a collective desire, a communal desire, a statewide desire, a national desire that is both inclusive, that is supportive of all the people? I use the analogy of the fact that this radio program has a life raft, and this life raft, it will hold 7.5 to 8 billion people. There's only one condition for getting on the life raft. No, it's not cash. You have to be willing to let go of the old ways of doing things because they don't work. Mm-hmm. And if you don't want to come along, that's okay too. No judgment. It's your choice. Mm-hmm. What about that aspect of, because we seem to be so fractured, not just in this country, but literally around the world. You know, you can barely bring two people together to come to any kind of consensus.
And you really don't have to.
Okay.
Because what at the core of our being is, what at the core of the collective consciousness is a desire for freedom. And every single person has that freedom to be, do, and have everything they want.
Okay.
If they think that something outside themselves is going to pay them lots of money for doing something, or if they think something outside themselves is going to take care of them, it's time for the government to stop taking care of people. It's just, it's not working. We need the awakening of consciousness one at a time. You know, it's a tipping point that we're going for.
Mm-hmm.
Just to realize that I am responsible. Freedom is at the core of every single desire we have. And as a country, we're giving up our freedom for security. And where is our security really?
Mm.
I mean, I know people who live in gated communities and they do not feel secure.
Isn't that ironic?
Yes.
I live in a steel box, but I still don't feel safe. And it's a steel box of your own creation, if you will, or a gated community, if you will, of your own creation.
And we are so free, we can even choose bondage. And that's what's happening.
Hmm. Now, let me throw something else into the mix here. There's, you know, you talk about freedom. On a higher level, a much higher level, and I've shared this on this program before, that freedom and liberty, at least, and this is just my musings, okay? Kind of like I think about the author Kazantzakis, who wrote The Last Temptation of Christ and the whole brouhaha in the 80s over the movie. Not a great movie, but it didn't disturb me, and I actually read the book. So, and in his preface, he said, hey, these are just my musings. I'm just saying, what if? So I'm just saying, what if? From a higher perspective, aren't freedom and liberty and even privacy, aren't they just they're illusions and really truly irrelevant to the fact that because we are spiritual beings, because we are connected, because we as individuals, when we choose to listen to and follow the promptings of that still small voice, that higher self, et cetera, that those things kind of fall away because they don't really matter. There's nothing wrong with them. Don't get me wrong there. But that if we're so connected, you and I, we have this awareness that each has a life's purpose that works together, though different, works together for the big picture, the grand design, if you will. Is there a place or space for that, or is the Church of Prophecy geared more toward that aspect of individuality and freedom and liberty and so forth?
That's a very good question, because and it could be both ways. It could go both ways. It is both ways. And it is the microcosm of the macrocosm. I truly believe in individual freedom to think, but that's a personal choice. That's why I'm saying you're so free, you can even choose bondage.
Mm-hmm.
I said, every book that's ever been written, every movie that's been put up on the big screen is there for one purpose and one purpose only, to make us think. How are we doing? What are we thinking? I'll never forget the book Atlas Shrugged. One of the first books I ever read after I found out I had a brain in my head. I was 35 years old before I found out I had a brain in my head, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. When I read that book and I shared it with someone else, and she said, oh, yeah, she said, I read that book. She said, I had the first original thought of my entire life after reading that book.
mm.
I mean, it's make us think. Let's think. Let's think outside the box. And I was a process improvement quality thing person at one time, and I understand about process. Everything can be improved. Everything. There's nothing that's ever going to stay the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's either got to be improved or it's going to decay.
Mm-hmm.
Did I answer your question?
Well, I'm just curious as to these aspects. You know, I talked earlier about, you know, the Declaration of Independence here in the United States says that we have the right, we have the inalienable right to pursue happiness.
Mm-hmm.
We have life and we have liberty. Those go without saying, so to speak, but they said them anyway. But it doesn't say that one of those inalienable rights is happiness. It says it's the pursuit thereof.
Pursue, yes.
Right.
And so many people are in pursuit that they are not experiencing it.
Ah. Yeah.
Cannot pursue it. You have to stop and be it.
It's kind of like the Buddha under the Bodhi tree finally getting it. Oh, in order for me to find it, I have to stop looking for it.
yes. Because it's not out there. That's conditional life. That's conditional living. It's conditional happiness. It ain't out there.
Yeah. But after this program, I am going to go travel the world to try to find myself, okay? Remember that from
but
the 60s?
You're not lost.
Yeah, remember that from the 60s? I go find myself. Okay.
And just the book you were just talking about, Jesus, the book you were talking about that you saw, read the book and you saw the movie?
Oh, The Last Temptation of Christ by Kazantzakis. Yes.
Okay. I was never moved to buy that book or see the movie. Didn't read the book, didn't see the movie. Because that's because I carry around my own Christ within me, and I go directly to the source.
Mm. Well, the station I was working for at the time was promoting or actually encouraging people to boycott. The kind of ironic aspect to it was the fact that the people were going over to Universal Studios. I think that's who was putting it on, or Paramount. They were parking their cars in a pay-for parking lot. And those monies were actually going to the very studio that they were boycotting and so forth. The more that they griped and moaned and groaned and complained, and then they said things like, oh, well, in the script it says this and that, and the other, that's blasphemy. And the script hadn't even been released. The movie wasn't even finished. But again, the more that they talked about it, the curiouser and curiouser I got, until I finally said, I got to get the book. I got to get the book. It wasn't easy to read. I had to get through it. And then when the movie finally did come out, I actually went to see it because I wanted to see what all the brouhaha was about. Now, you know, I'm the kind of person even back then as I am today where it didn't offend me. I wasn't bothered by it. Wasn't a great movie, not Oscar contender. I don't think it was a Raspberry contender, but nonetheless. But again, as I said earlier, in the preface, Kazantzakis said, these are just my musings. I'm just saying, what if? What if he didn't die up there on that that wooden thing there? What if he did live a life, a natural life, and have kids and et cetera, et cetera? You know, I'm not saying that's what happened.
And what if everything he can do, we can do?
And what if every exactly? Well, that was always fascinating to me too. You know, being asked, he was being asked, you know, by his followers, "Hey, wow, that's pretty neat. You know, you can juggle and turn water into wine. Can we do that?" And his response was, "Hey, you think this is great? Yeah, you can do this, but you think that's great? You guys are going to do more incredible things."
Yes.
And yeah, I kept wondering, what are they? You know, what are they? Raising Lazarus from the dead, I mean, it's pretty spectacular, not to mention the fact that it's in violation of the passage that says to everyone, it is appointed once to die, one time, and then the judgment. But you're going to have to talk to Lazarus about that one because he died twice, apparently. I'm still trying to understand that one. Not that it really matters. But it's fascinating to me to read the various, what I like to refer to as the great wisdom teachings. And Khalil is one of them as well. I have actually a hardbound copy of The Prophet. I've got Autobiography of Yogi, which was my metaphysical primer. I have several books on my phone that I listen to on occasion. One of them is called The Impersonal Life, which was given to me by a dear friend of mine, on my 21st birthday. I still have that. I had to have it rebound, but I still have that. I have numerous books regarding Paramahansa written by one of the last teaching disciples thereof. I have the Upanishads. I have Life Between Lives, talking about the different aspects of existence between this life and then the next life, accepting reincarnation as viable, and so many others that I have in my hard copies that I have in my library at home. And I think about that, and I think about where I live, and I think about the events that can happen on the mountain, fire in particular, that could destroy all of those. And then what you were saying earlier about how, you know, those are all on the outside. What's really important is what's on the inside. How do you encourage people to focus on that inner life, that inner existence, that inner education?
First of all, you have to want it. Let's start first. You have to believe it's possible, because if you don't believe it's possible, you aren't going to want it. And then you have to want it. And then you have to practice. My practice is a meditation practice. I do visualized meditation. I do all kinds of things. And it is practice. It is sitting with yourself, with a capital S, every morning, breathing very deeply, because that is the breath of life. It will never be taken away. You are an eternal being. You are here forever. You can't get it wrong, because you never get it done. But you want to get started right now on being the absolute best you can be.
We talked about another passage about being perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect, and that perfection is just to be. And that's really what
it just is.
Exactly. And that is really what you're talking about in that regard. And all of these things and all of these things will be added unto you. Happy, healthy, wealthy. Church of Prophet C, a new Trinity. And my guest is Karen Steele. If I may, I want to read something from your book. I actually read this a while ago after receiving the book, and I really liked this. And if I may, I'm going to just share this. It's a very, very short. Life is good. It's supposed to be fun. Life is eternal and free. Everywhere I go, whatever I do, I am my own legacy. I will return again and again to give birth to a new way of seeing. For I am a child of the universe, one whose source is well-being. We are all explorers and trailblazers, sailing uncharted seas. Desire is the wind of our sails. Our passion summons the breeze. There is no call for humanity given credit where...
Humility.
I beg your pardon, humility. There is no call for humility. Give credit where credit is due. There will never be in all eternity another you. And then to add to that, every child born is the light of the world, a song for genius creators. And of course, on the back cover, you have a photograph of a cute little kid in a Santa suit. And tell us who that is.
That's my grandson, Luke. He was 6 months old when that picture was taken. He's now 8.
Very, very cute. Very cute. You also have a great appendix in the back here, and I would encourage people to investigate many of the books that you have actually read from 76 to 2006. And I've read some of these. I have a copy and have skimmed through certain parts of A Course in Miracles and other things, as well as we have already mentioned Khalil Gibran's The Prophet and The Road Less Traveled, Think and Grow Rich, Napoleon Hill's book as well. To me, the folks you've also mentioned Einstein as your superhero. And I find it interesting, and I've found this to be the case over the years, those people who have been critical of certain individuals of note in our history, I find it fascinating as time goes on and we learn more and more about these individuals of note, how they were just as uncertain about certain things as all the rest of us. And yet, as I was growing up, I was told how certain this individual was about their position. I think about, for example, Darwin. And they talk about Darwin's theory of evolution. And I was taught that, he believed that this was absolutely absolute. And this is the way. And yet, if you were actually to read the book, I can't remember the title off the top of my head, where Darwin's theory of relativity, of evolution is contained.
Yeah, I know.
basically he says, hey, almost like on Kazantzakis, I could be right, but hey, it's early. I'm just, this is where I'm at today. And this could change tomorrow. This is not a certainty, but people would turn it into a certainty. And then they would just go after. And I say,
dig their heels in.
Yeah. And I say, as far as evolution is concerned, God created evolution. How you like that?
It is a stream of well-being, and it never ends.
Absolutely. Where do you see us as a species, as beings in, say, 100 or 1,000 years? You think we're going to get over that hump, as it were, and evolve
Absolutely.
Into something?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And Einstein's friend Max Planck said it best. He said, the spiritual laws, the physical laws, the scientific laws, they don't just change. What happens is that people have to die that believe them, and then new ones are born that pick up on it.
That's interesting that you put it in that context, because as I have followed loosely the goings and comings and goings in Washington over the last 30 or 40 years, and hearing all of the kind of stuff I was hearing and thinking, we need some fresh blood in there with some new ideas. And yet the same old garbage kept coming out over the 70s and 80s. Some started to change a little in the 90s. We get into the 21st century, a little more. And, of course, back in the 80s, I used to think, and the only way that this is going to change is some of these old fogies die off so we can get some of that new blood in there. I'm not asking for you to die prematurely or anything, but, And so what you're saying is absolutely true, that the only way that we're going to sort of evolve as a species is just that, is some of these old ways they've got to die off. Because it's very unlikely in some instances that individuals are going to change their ways of thinking unless they have some profound epiphany somewhere down the road in this life.
Well, there's no other way to explain the new babies being born that are coming in cable ready. I mean, these 8-year-olds know more about computers than I will ever learn in my entire lifetime.
Well, they're working on making a kid's cable ready, let me tell you. It's fascinating. Karen, I am most grateful for the time. I want to have you back again to talk more about this and other subjects as well as the Church of Prophecy. It's a new Trinity. Happy, healthy, wealthy. We encourage people to go to churchofprophecy.com. And
Richard?
Yes.
Because most people don't spell prophecy correctly, I also have another URL.
Please.
It's happyhealthyandwealthy.com.
I like that. Happyhealthyandwealthy.com. Okay, folks, we'll link to that. It'll take you straight to the church, to Church of Prophecy as well, and we encourage you to pick up a copy of the book. Before I let you go, I want to, first of all, thank you for giving us so much time on this program. I love talking about this stuff, as you can plainly tell. And
it's been a pleasure.
And I would also ask that if you find yourself, and I can never remember the distance between the East and West Coast, whether it's 3,000 or 5,000 miles, but should you find yourself on the Central Coast, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
Oh, that would be marvelous. I lived in Santa Barbara for 6 months once. I went to UCSB. And I would love to go back there.
Well, we have an open door for you here, and in the meantime, we'll conduct these interviews via Skype and have you back again to further elucidate on some of these things as we go into 2018. And again, a reminder that it is happyhealthyandwealthy.com is the website, Church of Prophet C, and that's SEA. And before we let you go, three final questions as we wrap up the program. And first of all, who is Karen Steele?
I'm a vibrational being that's following her bliss, trusting in the universe to bring about the cooperative components necessary to make my dream come true. And my dream is every child on the planet knowing who they are.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
A commitment of lifetimes. People talk about commitment, how important commitment is. My biggest commitment is the commitment of lifetimes. I see this new thought thread principle of the power in each individual being a commitment of lifetimes. I will be here lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, bringing it forward.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
To have fun. If it ain't fun, let it go.
There you go. I love it. I love it. Well, thank you again, Karen Steele, for joining us here on the program and for sharing your story and the concepts, if you will, the philosophy of the Church of Prophet C, a new Trinity, happy, healthy, wealthy, happy, healthy, and wealthy. And that's happyhealthyandwealthy.com as well for going to the website. Again, we thank you for joining us. And by the way, your last name is Steel. We thank you again for sharing this time. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And until next time, love to Lal.